Hearty greetings to all of our Voice of America listeners. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Here's a Sunny Side of Sports trivia question for you. Which team has the longest winning streak in U.S. professional sports? Now, it's not the New York Yankees or the Dallas Cowboys or even the Golden State Warriors. It's the Washington Castles. The Castles are part of World Team Tennis, and they hold an impressive 34-match win streak. And they're preparing to go for their sixth championship in a row when their season starts next week. This week, I spoke with Washington Castles owner Mark Ein, and we started by talking about World Team Tennis generally. One thing's for certain, it's no Wimbledon.
World Team Tennis has a long history. The league is actually 41 years old. It was started by Billie Jean King, and over the years, almost all the great players in the game have played World Team Tennis. On our team, we've had Serena Williams, Venus Williams. We have the Bryan brothers, Leander Paes, Martina Hingis, and it goes on and on and on. It really is tennis as a team sport. So Washington has a team, and there's teams around America. And the format is two men and two women, two sets of men of singles, men's and women's, two sets of doubles, men's and women's, and mixed doubles. We play sets up to five, and the winner of the match is whoever wins the most games. So it's really exciting. It's very much like every other team sport you'd see around tennis, and people love it. Fans love it. As I said, the league's been around a long time. We started the team in Washington. This will be our ninth season coming up. And we usually sell out crowds. Everyone comes out. People have really embraced our team, and they love it. If you're a great, if you're a tennis fan, you get to see some of the best tip players in the world up close. We play in about a 4,000 or 5,000 seat auditorium, so you get to see some of the best players in the world playing up close. But if you're not a tennis fanatic, but you just love team sports, and you just love sports, and you want to come watch a Washington team beat a New York team, we get a lot of people like that. And then we also just get people who want to have a fun night because it's some of the best tennis in the world, but it is a little bit less. It's a little bit more exciting. We have cheerleaders and the guy from the Atlanta Hawks who walks around on stilts and gets the crowd fired up. We encourage people to cheer for the home team, occasionally cheer against the away team. And I think it's the kind of sports experience that American sports fans come to expect. And people really love it.
And I can say as a fan, it's a lot of fun to be there, but it is very competitive. And you mentioned Billie Jean King. Billie Jean has this phrase she often uses, pressure is a privilege. And I want to ask you, the Castles right now have the longest winning streak in U.S. professional sports, 34 straight matches that they've won. You're going for a sixth championship in a row this year, seventh since 2009. How do you handle that pressure?
Well, some of the history that we've been able to make has been pretty extraordinary. And it is interesting, even as an owner who's not on the court, I think everyone feels the pressure. And it's an interesting phenomenon because Serena, who's become a good friend through this, tells me she's more nervous playing for us than when she works out on center court at the U.S. Open, because when she's playing at the U.S. Open, she's only playing for herself, really. Obviously, she has a lot of fans, but it's herself. When you're playing World Team Tennis, you've got all your teammates on the bench, and you've got a whole city who's cheering for you. And every player, to some extent, when you talk to them, really comes to appreciate that they're playing for something bigger than themselves. So they definitely feel a little bit more pressure. But the flip side of that is that they also have their teammates to cheer them on. And it's a lot like Davis Cup and Fed Cup. You see the same phenomenon. And oftentimes, the best players actually play the best tennis in those situations, because while the stakes are high, they also have a support mechanism and sport network that they don't have in other places. For us, our attitude about all of these things, from the organization to the coach to the players, is if we do everything we possibly can to give ourselves a chance to win and try our absolute hardest, we accept any outcome. So it's a lot more focused on the process than the outcome. And fortunately, we've had great outcomes, and I really credit that to having a great process and staying focused on the process. The last time we didn't win the championship, we did everything we could. We had great players. They really, really focused hard, but we didn't get it done, and no one was really that upset because we knew that we had no regrets. We had done everything we can, and if you do that, you can accept whatever outcome you get.
Part of that process isn't just on the court, it's outside as well. And you mentioned these amazing players that have played on the Castles, Serena Williams, Venus Williams, the Bryant brothers are playing this season. Talk to me about what they've done off the court to encourage tennis with the Castles. I know you've done some clinics with children and trying to get them started at a young age.
Yeah, it's been such a privilege to have stars of the caliber that you've mentioned representing, not just representing our team, but really embracing our team and embracing our community. And when you hear how much it meant to Venus when she won the championship, I think it was 2012, she was the last match on the court. We were all tied. It came down to a tiebreaker, her against Coco Vandeweghe. Tiebreaker's up to 5. She was down 2-0, and she came back, won 5 straight games, and won the championship. She actually called her mom and said, "Mom, that was one of the most important, special tennis experiences of my life because I didn't just win for myself, I won for my community." And one of the ways that they really feel part of the community is we make a point of doing clinics in our stadium on the day of matches with kids from the inner city. We, throughout the year, go into neighborhoods around our region and hold clinics with our players, our coaches, our staff. Every night, and again, I mentioned that most nights our stadium is totally sold out, we always bring 200 kids through charitable organizations, kids who otherwise wouldn't have a chance to come to a match. We do military night one night where we work with veterans organizations to bring kids to a match who wouldn't otherwise have that chance. We give out 1,000 free tennis rackets every year. So any kid who comes to a match or a clinic under 12 who doesn't have a tennis racket, we just give them a tennis racket. And that was the founding mission when I started this. It really was about, it wasn't about winning and losing championships. It wasn't even as much about tennis. It was doing something that could really bring our community together and give back to our community. And that's always our number one objective. It's been interesting that because that was how we started it, we've had this great success on the court. But I really think that's because these players just really feel like they're part of something special. And then they get on the court and they want to do something special. And over the years, they've done that over and over again.
And even outside the community here in Washington, D.C., you kind of have fostered a global sense of community on the team. I mean, I look at the names of these players. Martina Hingis is from Switzerland. Leander Paes is from India. You have Anastasia Rodionova, who is originally from Russia, now plays for Australia. And even past players, Kevin Anderson from South Africa. There really is a sense of global tennis on this team.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Our players have come from all over the world, but many of them will tell you that they feel like Washington is now their second home. Sam Querrey, who played on the team last year, had such a great experience that he's back this year. Actually, during the Olympics, he's playing with us. But when he plays other times in Washington, he really feels like he's part of our community. Leander Paes, as I mentioned also, you know, he always says Washington is like his second home. He's been our captain and our MVP many times. So it's great to bring these people from all over the world and then make that connection to where they really feel like Washington is their second home.
Do you think world team tennis could ever expand to be a global league and have teams outside of the U.S.?
I do, for sure. In fact, there is a league that has started. It's now going to be in its third season, called the IPTL, which very much uses exactly the world team tennis format, and they play in cities across Asia and the Middle East with actually some of the biggest stars in the game playing. The interesting thing about team tennis is that in the 70s, team tennis was really as big as the tours. In fact, Jimmy Connors in 1974 won all the legs of the Grand Slam other than the French Open, which he didn't play because he was playing team tennis. And Chris Everett for 4 years didn't play the French Open because she played team tennis. And what you find is that once people get this experience, they really love it. We've had players miss Davis Cup, Olympics, tournaments, everything to do this because they really feel like the players feel like it's something special and the fans like there's feels like there's something special. And I think that's not just a U.S. phenomenon, it's a global phenomenon. And I think the popularity of IPTL just in 2 years demonstrates that. They play in front of big crowds and get great players to play. So I think that there's a lot of growth for the league and the concept around the world.
Coming up next, we'll have more of our interview with Washington Castle's owner Mark Ein on the global expansion of World Team Tennis. I'm Andrew Palcheski, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America!
I'm Andrew Palcheski, sitting in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Well, as World Team Tennis's Washington Castles prepare to begin their season next week, there's tennis happening right now in the nation's capital, the City Open, one of the precursors to the U.S. Open in late August. Our Bill Werkinger was at the tournament and spoke with 23rd-ranked Sloane Stephens as she prepares to represent the U.S. in tennis at this year's Olympics.
I'm really excited. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be an amazing opportunity. It's with people I really love. So, I mean, I think it's going to be great.
How did you sort out the medical concerns and security issues at the Olympics?
I think I got advice from the best people I possibly could. I used all my resources, and I decided for me that it would be okay for me to go. So I'm looking forward to it.
Can you tell us about the Team USA vibe with the ladies?
Team America. It's a pretty good team, if you ask me. Pretty strong, pretty deep, and a group of good-looking girls.
Stephens was one of the young American players Mark Ein, owner of World Team Tennis's Washington Castles, talked about in our interview. In our next segment, he talks about how two former Castles players, Venus and Serena Williams, were inspired by tennis legend Billie Jean King, and how the Williams sisters and other U.S. players are inspiring future generations of potential tennis stars, both on and off the court.
One of the great stories is that Venus and Serena, when they were 8 and 9 years old living in Compton and they were playing tennis, went to a World Team Tennis clinic in Long Beach with Billie Jean King, and they still vividly remember that clinic. They often talk about remembering meeting Billie and then getting free pizza, but they cite it as one of their inspirations to be pro tennis players. And when I see the looks on kids' faces in our stadium when a Venus, a Serena, a Sloane, the Bryan brothers walk in the stadium and these kids get a chance to meet them, learn from them. You look in their eyes and you go, I wonder if we're going to inspire one of the greats going forward. And so I think that's one of the key things. Tennis has been a big part of my life. And when I was a kid, there were 44 U.S. tournaments, and now there's only 12. And I think things like team tennis are a great way to create that aspirational and inspirational connection for young kids to the game of tennis, where they can watch matches, meet the players, frankly, just like all the major sports do. I mean, I think one of the reasons that sports become popular is people play it, but then they go watch it and see the pros, and then they put the poster up in their bedrooms, and they buy the jersey and wear that, and they dream about being on that court or on that field one day. And I think that's one of the key things we need to do in America to inspire kids. And I feel really proud that I think in our community anyways, we've done that in some way.
Absolutely. And you mentioned a couple minutes ago, I want to jump back to the Olympics, because you mentioned that a couple of different times. This is being an Olympic year. Is it a challenge for you as far as scheduling, as far as getting the players in, dealing with the Olympic schedule?
Yeah, I mean, the whole tennis calendar got adjusted because of the Olympics, because it takes 2 weeks out in the middle of the summer season, which is already scheduled really tightly. And so when that schedule got adjusted, we got adjusted. We moved weeks from the beginning of July to the beginning of August. It's been interesting because there's actually a lot of players who aren't playing the Olympics. And if they're not playing the Olympics, team tennis is a really compelling alternative. So the quality of players is as good as it's been almost since I can remember. We have great, great players. I think, you know, I don't think anyone's worried about missing, what's on TV. You know, people's travel and vacation schedules get set years in advance, so maybe there's a few more conflicts on that. But I think it's going to be a great season, and we'll go back to where we were next year. But I do believe it's going to be a great season, a lot because the quality of the players is phenomenal this year.
And in an odd way, the timing kind of works out in your favor, because right preceding the World Team Tennis season is the City Open here in Washington, D.C., which is the big annual tennis tournament. So I imagine you'll have some players who come for the City Open and then might stay over for World Team Tennis.
Yeah, well, we got a lot of players doing that. And obviously, it's usually the reverse, where we have 3 weeks of tennis and it leads into the City Open. This year, it's the opposite way around. It's if they come first. And I think any time you can... It's kind of the opposite, I think, of what people expected when we came to town. They worried that maybe more tennis would cannibalize the other. But, in fact, I think it actually grows it, because it makes people excited for the sport. It gets them wanting more by the end, whether we come first or the City Open comes first. So we're blessed in our community to have this much great professional tennis here. And my hope is that we can have more and more great pro tennis around the United States.
Yeah, it's certainly trending that way, I think. Looking forward to this season, what are your expectations? What are you hoping the team will achieve? Other than another championship,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, I mean, obviously on the court, you hope that we win a championship. But I never go into the season thinking we're going to do it, even though we've done it five straight times in 6 or 7 years. I never, ever actually think we're going to do it. Every team is shooting for us. We, for a long time, have not had the highest payroll. We have great players and we have a lot of continuity, so we always have a good shot at it, but I never count that that's going to happen. So, you try to make sure you have a good team on the court, and I think we have that. I actually tend to focus more on what's happening in our community and in the stands. I want to make sure that every person who comes has an incredible experience. I want to make sure that a lot of people come. We, other than those charity tickets, opposed to a lot of sporting events, we don't give tickets, we don't discount them, but we provide a lot of value, and we love seeing packed stands, and we think that motivates our players. So we want a lot of people to come out, and we want them to have an incredible time when they come, and that takes a lot of work, frankly. It takes a lot of work to make sure every detail is thought about, to make sure that it's as good a sports experience as they can have throughout the year. And you know, I often think about the amount of sporting events I went to as a kid with my dad, my family, my brother, and my friends. And they're some of the greatest memories of my life is going to sporting events with those folks. And that's what I hope that we can do, too. And so, you know, we're hopefully – one of our slogans is Castles Tennis, where memories are made. And I really hope that we're creating a lifetime of memories for our fans who come out and watch us play.
And one of those fans who's been in the stands, and I've seen her there in the past couple years, First Lady Michelle Obama.
Yeah.
What's it like to have your team play in front of the First Lady and have her there watching your players?
It's such an unbelievable honor. It's so incredible that she does that. And, she's done it over and over again. She's done it pretty much every year for the last 5 years. And, It's always an incredible honor, something that I really appreciate. She loves tennis. She loves our team. Her kids were younger when they started coming. They're now older, but they make it a family night. You know, they come, they bring the kids, they bring the grandmother, they bring their friends, and we completely leave them alone. They just come out like any other family and have a great night. And it really is an incredible honor when she comes, and frankly, a lot of other luminaries from our community, whether it's people from Capitol Hill or the White House or business or other sports teams. It's incredible to see. It's kind of been the place to be and be seen, but also just to come for those six or seven nights in the summer. And it never gets old. It's always a thrill.
Finally, I always hesitate to ask this because, you know, no one has a crystal ball and can see into the future, but give me a sense of where you think World Team Tennis and the Castles will be, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road.
Yeah. So, you know, I every year we seem to find new heights, so I never, and I, you know, we really look every year just to make it incrementally better and bigger every year. And so far, every year we've been able to do that. We play it in bigger and bigger stadiums every year, get bigger and bigger crowds. We always try to do all the good things from the previous years and think of new things to do. You know, in 3 or 5 years, I think we'll be selling out four or five years, I think we can be selling out 5,000-seat auditoriums. I think we can have even more media exposure. We have an ESPN. We're on ESPN and the Tennis Channel now, but I think we can do that. I think for me, the biggest thing is I'd like to go to 10 or 12 teams in the U.S. I think that would be I think that would make the biggest difference. And then from 10 to 12 to 16 to 20, I mean, you study other professional sports leagues, a lot of them look like we do today. And, you know, it's hard to remember that the NBA, the NHL was 6 teams and the NBA was 8 teams or whatever. But you don't get there in one day. But I see the progress and I see the popularity and I see how much players love it and how much players want to play in it and other cities would like to have a team. So my hope is we keep growing, but the league also keeps growing. And I think those mutually reinforce each other. So I think the better we do, the better they do and vice versa.
And from 16 or 20 teams in the U.S., maybe to teams abroad, like you said, and
yeah,
all over the world.
And if they have their own leagues, then maybe we have, you know, a tournament with the champions from different leagues playing. It's endless. And one thing that's clear in the tennis world is that the team concept is getting much more focus and attention. So Davis Cup continues to grow and is massively popular in lots of parts of the world. IPTL has sprung up. They're playing in front of 10 to 20,000 fans in major Asian cities. There's a new concept Roger Federer is doing, which is a Ryder Cup-like event called the Laver Cup. That's a team event, and we're thriving. And this is all – I mean, Davis Cup's been around a long time, but all these other things are new. And it's once people are part of this, whether you're a fan, a sponsor, or a player, they really think this should be a bigger part of our sport. There's a place in our sport for this, and it should be bigger, frankly, like it was 30 years ago. And so I think all the team concepts are well-positioned to thrive, and I think it will help the game a lot. We definitely – all of these team concepts grow the addressable audience. They grow the people who are interested in it. And if you bring them in once, then they get hooked, and then hopefully tennis becomes a bigger part of their life.
My thanks to Mark Ein, owner of the Washington Castles World Team Tennis Team, for that interview. The Washington Castles, of course, will kick off their season next week, going for their 6th straight championship to take home the King Trophy, which, of course, is named after the World Team Tennis founder and tennis legend Billie Jean King. So good luck to them on that. I'll be there at the matches, and we'll be reporting more on that on the Sunny Side of Sports in the coming weeks. Well, that wraps up the July 22nd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. So thank you very much for listening this week while I've been filling in for Sonny Young. I'll be back again next week after Sonny's vacation continues, so I hope you'll come back next week and join us again. And thank you for listening this week. Thanks to Voice of America producer Kwame Ofori, VOA engineer Peter Hundley, and thank all of you for tuning in on this Friday evening. Hope you all have a great weekend. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski here in Washington at Voice of America headquarters. Thank you again for joining us. We'll see you next week. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For generations, the United States has been a leader in providing development assistance across the globe to alleviate suffering and build shared progress and prosperity. In 2010, as food prices spiked and pushed the numbers of the food insecure people to over 1 billion, the administration of President Barack Obama launched Feed the Future, the U.S. government's primary global hunger and food security initiative. The initiative's main objective is the advancement of global agricultural development as a proven mechanism for economic growth. Feed the Future is helping millions of rural farming families to boost their incomes. In 2015 alone, these farmers increased sales on their farms by more than $800 million. The U.S. government also reached nearly 18 million children in developing countries with vital interventions to improve their nutrition last year. In early July, the United States took yet another big step toward eliminating hunger and malnutrition. The United States Congress passed the Global Food Security Act, and President Obama signed it into law. Under the Global Food Security Act, the White House will develop the first-ever Global Food Security Strategy, a comprehensive approach for assisting developing countries to increase sustainable and equitable agricultural development, reduce hunger, improve nutrition, develop rural infrastructure, and stimulate rural economies. It also promotes transparency by instituting standards of effectiveness and requiring an annual report, tracking the expenditures of 11 federal departments and agencies that engage in agricultural development and food security efforts. The Global Food Security Act of 2016 will put Feed the Future, our global hunger and food security initiative, into law, said President Obama in a written statement. This game-changing development initiative, the first of my administration, has helped increase economic growth and stem the tide of global hunger, poverty, and malnutrition over the span of just a few years, he said. While we've already accomplished so much through this collaborative global partnership, I know that with the continued effort and support that this legislation provides, we can achieve what was just a few years ago the unimaginable. We can end global poverty and hunger within our lifetimes.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria kills thousands of people each year, but there are some simple things you can do to protect your family. If you can, put screens in your windows. A simple screen can keep disease-carrying mosquitoes out of your home. If you go outside, wear light-colored clothing and long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. After it rains, empty all containers of standing water. The water in just one discarded tire can become a breeding ground for thousands of mosquitoes. Make sure your home is clear of debris and anything that holds water, including discarded cans, water containers, and rubbish. Empty containers that livestock drink from regularly so that mosquitoes cannot breed there.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at UpfrontAfrica.